please, to give me an easier fight like Conor McGregor.
I'm announcing my retirement, you guys. It's not my time anymore.
I want to fight with your chicken because this is number one easy fight in lightweight division.
I want to people remember me as the best female fighter.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have a correction. This contest has been judged a majority draw.
I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, I'd like to take this chance to apologize to absolutely nobody. The double champ does what the he wants.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're such a cute, yes, you are. Oh, hello. I've been joined by my co-hosts for the evening. How are you?
I'm doing all right. How are you doing?
Pretty good, actually. I've come to realize this is like the highlight of my week. I can talk about MMA for a long time. Oh, damn it, dog, get off of me. No, get off. Damn it, you stupid fat puggle. There's only room for one of you here. So anyways, yeah, I realize this is the highlight of my life.
Wow.
I know. No pressure.
I don't know what to tell you. Even if this was average for you, I'd be okay with that.
Yeah, you know, it just, I mean, for fuck's sake, the other day, welcome to the show, everybody, here at halfguarded.com with who the fuck are those guys? I'm Mike Huff, and that's Matt Grady. He'll take over in a bit. But I recorded like an hour and a half of a podcast on Tuesday, and I don't even know if I'm going to release it, but I had to get the dogs out of the house because we had a guy coming to tune up the clocks, and obviously he needs it quiet and shit.
Wait, hold on. What? Tune up the clocks?
My dad, for his first wedding anniversary, my mom got him this really beautiful grandfather clock. And it's like, you know, this big, giant thing. And it has, you have to have a guy come and align everything and make sure all the gears work. Like, it's a real old school, sophisticated, like, there's no electronics in it or anything like that. And so you have to, you have to tune it, make sure that it chimes right. And you have to do it every couple of years. And obviously, howling puggles aren't good for that, so I just walked the dogs for a long time, and I recorded a show of me just walking around and talking, and then afterwards I'm like, I don't even know if I want to release this. Stop looking at your brother like that. Stop it. So yeah, I'm a madman, and there's a lot more that goes on at halfguarded.com that most people don't even see. The number of columns I've written I don't publish, the number of podcasts I do that I don't publish. Yeah.
Why wouldn't you post this particular one?
Honestly, I'm just lazy to transfer it off my phone. That's really, really sad. Plus, I'm not, it's kind of like, when I'm with you, it's fine, because there's somebody to guide me. I don't always know what I say on shows. I just kind of get in the zone, and like, I have some half recognition. I'm like, oh yeah, okay, I was talking about race relations, and this and that, and I'm like, I don't know. I know I used, I know I said nigger once or twice, but it was in context, but I'm not really sure. I went really hard at Armenians for like 5 minutes, just ripping the shit out of them, so I don't really know what's going on. But I know what did happen this past week, and we had the greatest show of pay-per-view of all time or whatever, and then we got a bunch of shit coming up, and you're going to guide me through it. So, everybody, I no longer am in control.
All right, let's do this. We'll do the same drill as usual. We'll go back in time, we'll go to current, then we'll look ahead. So, obviously, this past weekend, arguably, I should say, the biggest show in UFC history, UFC 205 in New York City at MSG, went down Saturday night, November 12th. There's been some debate. Right after the show, Dana White said it shattered all records. It's already kind of looking like that may not be the case, but records it definitely has set so far is the domestic attendance record.
No,
most people,
U.S. domestic.
As opposed, what else would domestic mean?
Well, I think of like domestic is including Canada. Because like when you include pay-per-view buys, Canadian pay-per-view buys get counted as domestic, not international. Canada's just, you know, United States 51, so whatever.
Okay, so in the continental United States, this was the most attended show ever with 20,427 people in the building, and it also set the gate record anywhere ever, Australia, Canada, wherever they go, with $17.7 million. The pay-per-view numbers aren't in yet, but it's trending well in the range of, 202, and 100 in that ballpark, but there's no real set figures yet. The FS1 prelims did only the third best ratings ever. People were really excited about the numbers, but two previous McGregor headline pay-per-views had better prelim ratings. So, I'm not saying it's a mixed bag or a failure or any stretch, but it's not like it shattered every single record known to the UFC, but, clearly one of the biggest shows ever. Not a disappointment, but, I think people got a little ahead of themselves with some of the, every record smash. That doesn't look like the case.
I'm actually, and obviously the pay-per-view numbers, like, nobody really knows right now. Why the fuck is Fight Pass not working? Fuck you, UFC, you dumb bastards. I can't be expected to do this with just one aspect of my personality being exposed. Whatever the fuck that means. But, like, I'd be surprised, like, if this doesn't beat August. Just because, I know Nate is a much bigger deal than Eddie Alvarez, but I thought, like, going for the title, the whole New York thing, it just felt like, and this got so much attention, and so, like, I'm kind of surprised if it doesn't set the all-time record, like, which is, I think speaks highly of basically just where the UFC's at, where, oh, wow, you didn't set the biggest pay-per-view buy of all time, it's only second, what a disappointment.
I mean, the other factor is, I always consider, like, the grudge match aspect of it, that people want to see two guys who they think legit don't like each other fight. I mean, that's just natural. And that heat really wasn't there with Alvarez and McGregor, I don't think. Obviously, they had that little melee at the presser before the event with the chair and everything. But a lot of people felt like that was staged. It wasn't really genuine or whatever. The grudge between Nate and Connor seemed more genuine and real. So I don't know how much of an impact that had if people knew Eddie as well, because obviously Nate going into that rematch with Connor was a much bigger star than Eddie in this one. So it'll be interesting to see where the final numbers end up. Does the common fan really care about the first show in New York? Or is it just another show to them? Why would you even care if it's in New York if you live in Wisconsin?
Yeah, I understand that. I think just the way that they hyped it of this is a very special event, plus just the fact that you get all that extra New York media, which you don't normally have, I thought would kind of put it over the top. But it could also be just a sign that titles don't, Vince Russo was right. Titles are just props. Like, nobody wants to say it, but, like, if Nate Diaz, who is basically a journeyman, lightweight, welterweight, good but not great, can do better than Eddie Alvarez, the world champion who had just beaten several world champions in a row, if that in Madison Square Garden, in the show that they said was the biggest of all time, with Conor going for the double gold, if somehow Nate Diaz, because of a grudge, does bigger pay-per-view numbers, I think says a lot as far as what people really want to see, which is essentially for your big shows, they want a spectacle. They want something crazy to happen, and this is almost more sport, and I don't know, I guess maybe people don't want to watch the sport of fighting. They want to watch, some primitive, fuck you, I hate your mother, I hate your mother, let's bang it out in the center of the cage.
Yeah, and I also think that both the Diaz, I want to say the Diaz brand, because that sounds ridiculous, but there's something to that now between, Nick coming from, the GSP fight and laying down in the cage against Anderson and the 5-year suspension, and now Nate talking crap, calling Connor out, winning the first fight, getting his ass handed to him in the beginning of it, coming back to win it, choking out Connor, then going 5 rounds with Connor and getting his ass whooped again, then the vaping thing after. They've kind of got this legend to themselves now. Even if they're not the best fighters in the world, people want to see those guys fight. Eddie Alvarez is not either Diaz brother.
Yeah, and I thought Eddie actually did And again, we're nitpicking. This is clearly one of the five biggest shows in UFC history, probably. Probably one of the two or three biggest shows ever. And probably one
might be the biggest.
And it's probably one of the top 10 biggest pay-per-views of all time, period. So it's a, right. We're really, splitting hairs here. I thought Eddie did a good job in the build-up. I liked the way that he trash-talked Connor. I thought some of it was really good and really biting. But at the end, and then, not that he was faking it, but there's something about a Diaz brother that is just real as hell. Like when, that when Nate's out there, like if you said, "Hey, fuck you, Eddie Alvarez, I'll fight you in the parking lot," he'd be like, "Ah, whatever," and blow you off because he'd be a dumb fan. Nate'd be like, "Yeah, you want to fucking go? Let's go right now. You got a knife? I got a knife too. I got me and my whole crew." And like when Nate trains, those are not just training partners; it's his actual crew. Like they are basically, if Cesar Gracie didn't come around and teach them skills, these guys would just be a gang. And there's something, again, really realistic about that. And Connor, to his credit, has always stayed in Ireland with his crew, basically. And I think there's just something to be said that in this day and age, we're a very cynical populace. And so we see through bullshit a lot easier than back in the day. Connor is all bullshit, but we kind of are entertained by it. But Nate isn't. And when you get to Nate Diaz or somebody like maybe even like a Donald Cerrone would maybe do better, because that when Cerrone goes, you're like, that guy, he's into it. He's really, when he says giddy up, I'll fight anyone, he's my teammate, whatever, I'll scrap. You're like, shit, he's really serious right there. Whereas Eddie, again, an amazing fighter, super entertaining, well-spoken, good-looking, I think. I know he is. And had some good lines and some good digs at Connor. And it just didn't click. Again, when we say it doesn't click, it's basically like the, a couple hundred, maybe like 100,000 buys here and there. And I think you brought it up last week. It could be a Trump thing. Just they didn't get as much attention.
True.
And maybe if it was another week, perhaps it'd be different. I'm really sad that Donald Trump did not go to UFC 205 like he wanted to. I thought that would be the funniest fucking thing in the world, that, our president makes his first appearance at a cage fight. That's Rome burning right there. That's Nero on a fiddle. Like, that would have been amazing. Like, I love the fact that Donald Trump wants to have a pro wrestling promoter's wife in his cabinet and wanted to make his first appearance at a cage fight. This is different than what we've seen from other politicians. I'm pretty sure that George Herbert Walker Bush never ever thought about the idea of going to a cage fight. Maybe he went to polo matches or something like that, but he never went to no cage fight.
No. So the fight itself, McGregor, obviously we know, beat Alvarez via knockout at 304 in the second round. McGregor really just took Alvarez apart. It was something to behold. He knocked Alvarez down three times in the first and finished him with, it almost was like a Mortal Kombat style four punch combo to end the fight. It's rare you see striking two guys at such a high level with such disparate striking games. Connor was in there calm as hell, looked confident, seemed like he was gonna go get a glass of milk at the fridge. Alvarez, on the other hand, was a little, he was pacing back and forth. He looked a little nervous. I don't know if the magnitude of the moment got to him. I mean, he's been in the game a long time. He's had big fights, but never anything at this level. MSG sold out. I mean, when he won the title, I think, I don't know if that was a Fight Pass show, but it wasn't on the pay-per-view. It was FS1.
That was Fight Pass.
He won the title on Fight Pass. Because so it's like
Joanna got the, FS1 that weekend. So, like, yeah, sure. He fought on Fight Pass in, like, the Palms or, Hard Rock Cafe in Vegas. So this was big difference.
Yeah, big difference. And I felt like, and I'm reading into it, and, like, a lot of people like to say, fighters at this level don't get shook. But he looked a little shook, to use that term the kids use. So basically, McGregor backed up the talk and did what he said he would again. He keeps doing this. He says what he's going to do, then he does it, excluding the first Nate fight. To me, became an even bigger star out of this and further proved that he truly is an elite fighter. I know a lot of fans and people in the bubble don't like to admit that. Say he hasn't fought wrestlers. He hasn't fought anybody good. But it's like, let's really look at things here. He beat Jose Aldo, the greatest featherweight of all time, by knockout in 13 seconds. Before that, he beat the best wrestler in the featherweight division by knockout in the second round in Chad Mendes. He beat Nate in the second fight. Then he just destroyed Alvarez on the biggest stage of his career, under the most scrutiny, under the most pressure. It was a career-defining performance that I don't want to say I've never seen, but I'm trying to think of something similar, maybe like John Jones and Hua, but it was not the same stage by any stretch.
Yeah, the only time I've ever really seen anything kind of like this was BJ Penn and Matt Hughes, the first fight, where I just like, because it was basically, you know, BJ moves up, and he didn't just win, he dominated a guy. In fact, Matt Hughes was a far more dominant champion than Eddie Alvarez had been. Sure. But yeah, this is, to me, far and away the most impressive win of Conor McGregor's entire career. It's like it's actually one of the few fights he's had in a while where there's not like an asterisk. Like, okay, he beats Jose Aldo. He landed one punch. Anybody can get knocked out on one punch. It's kind of fluky. Sure. Chad Mendes was short notice. Dustin Poirier is good but not great. You know, and Nate Diaz, he got his ass beat once, and the second time he kind of barely squeaked by. But this was going up in weight against a guy who had, you know, just knocked the shit out of Dos Anjos in a round and just beaten, you know, Pettis and Melendez, you know, the last three lightweight champions. Eddie ran through them and beat them all, you know, convincingly, and he was just out. I mean, it looked like he was outclassed. I mean, he was outclassed in the feet. It was beyond impressive. Eddie becomes only the second man to ever get knocked down three times in a round and survive. But just when I'm watching, it's just like, holy shit. And, you know, Eddie, even afterwards, basically said, like, I didn't do my game plan. I had screwed up. And he didn't. And there's something about Conor. I think that there is, you know, something to the idea of the moment catches up with people, and Conor has now created an environment where he has a huge advantage because nobody is used to this like he is. When they have to do all this media, all this pressure, when basically every fight is the biggest fight of all time, for a guy like Eddie Alvarez, who is, you know, the king of the underground and all this stuff, it's like all of a sudden you're in Madison Square Garden and all the pressure's on you. Yeah, that's a first time for you. Whereas Conor, that's the third time this calendar year, fourth time within the last 12 months that he's, like, literally every fight he's had has been the biggest fight ever. And he's right, used to it. It's not going to mentally get to him. And so he can, you know, just go out there and fight his fight. And you could just see Conor was in a different zone mentally, especially after the first knockdown when he jumped in, tried to do a little bit of ground and pound, and as soon as Eddie got up, Conor backed off. He kept his distance. He was calm. He didn't, you know, go crazy. Like, a lot of fighters in that situation go crazy and try to overwhelm him. Conor just said, nope, I'm going to stick to my game plan. I'm going to throw some front kicks and throw my left. Like this is a Conor, I'm like, this guy could never gas. It was like the opposite of the Diaz fight. I'm like, this Conor could fight for 15 rounds. But, right. I mean, when it was over, I'm like, it's weird because he's never defended a title. He hasn't really, like, he's beaten obviously the best in the divisions, but he hasn't had that John Jones or George St. Pierre streak where you're like, holy crap, there's nobody left for him to fight. Like, there's plenty of featherweights and plenty of lightweights he hasn't fought. But at the same time, I'm like, there's the dude's a fucking two division champion at the same time, and he fought more than almost any other fighter, and definitely more than any other champion. I mean, it was less than 12 months ago when he starched Jose Aldo. That's crazy. Like, he spent all of 2015. It's like this pro wrestling thing. 2015 was about the build of him becoming featherweight champion. He beats Dennis Seaver. He gets a fake title against Chad Mendes and wins the real belt. In 2016, it's all been about his rise to becoming a lightweight champion. He had the great feud with Nate Diaz. And then he beats Eddie Alvarez, his big show. And there's some part of me that's like, well, I have no idea what he does for an encore. He's as big as he could ever be, There's nothing left. I can't think of anything for him to do except for try to challenge at 170, where you'd be like, wow, he's doing something historical. Because he's not just having big fights, he's having historical fights. And there's very little history left to be made. It's just weird. But he's only 28. Like, he's got, you know, probably, what, 5 to 7 years, roughly, of more or less his prime physical condition to go out and fight. Like, and with the way he fights, I mean, god damn, that could be like another 20 fights. No, but there's never been anything like that in combat sports ever. Like, Ali could have done it, but he missed all that time because of the draft issue. Like, for a guy to be this young and this dominant and this huge and popular, it's unbelievable. And I don't know what, I have no idea where he goes next, except for, I guess, Nate part three. Otherwise, I don't know what else you do.
Yeah. I mean, interestingly enough, and people don't want to look at this aspect of it, he's 8-1 in the UFC. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, he's not like some joke that they just push to the top. Granted, the first few guys he faced might not have been wrestlers or the best guys in the world, but they're still UFC caliber fighters. They didn't bring in Mickey Gauls to fight him. He was fighting legit guys right off the bat. Not only is he 8-1, he's got 8 performance bonuses too. The only fight he did not get a performance bonus was the Max Holloway fight where he hurt his knee. So he has exciting fights, and he goes balls out every fight. It's not like he's grinding these fights out. He's finishing everybody. I mean, he finished Brimage, Brandao, Poirier, Seaver, Mendez, Aldo, and now Alvarez. Obviously, the only guy he didn't finish was Diaz, which I don't think there's a lot of shame in. It's not like that ever really happens anyway. So not only is it the charisma, not only is it that he wins when he has to, but the fights are exciting as hell.
Yeah,
he will stand and bang with everybody. He never really... You could say in the second Diaz fight he stalled a little bit. He was running or resetting, depending on if you live in Ireland or somewhere else. You have a different opinion on it. But bottom line is he has exciting fights. Both those Diaz fights are classics. If you had to watch a couple fights, you would go back and watch those. So it's the whole package with him. It's the pre-fight pressers, the post-match promos, the actual wins he garners, and the style he fights. It's like a perfect combination of all of it.
Yeah, and you can almost put that in perspective of, look what Max Holloway has done. He's on like a 7-fight win streak or whatever. He's looked
more 9. I think he's at 9 now.
Yeah, it's something super impressive. We're going to see him in a couple weeks against Anthony Pettis, a fight where it's probably a 50-50 fight. And Conor easily beat him with a blown ACL. Like,
right. And wrestled him too.
And it wasn't
him that fight. Yeah. And took him down over and over again. It was crazy. If you go back and watch that fight, it's really weird.
And it wasn't that long ago either. You know, it's like, Conor is just, he's a true phenom that I never thought you'd see anything like this, because obviously we've had guys who are great and charismatic, George St. Pierre, but nothing like Conor. I mean, we let off the show here, people heard one of the greatest post-fight comments of all time from Conor, and he's delivering this shit off the top of his head. That whole Mystic Mac thing, you can just tell he just made that up on the spot. And it became a thing, and the champion apologizes to absolutely no one. Like, that's been played everywhere. My brother and I watched it. I think we rewatched that part at least 10 times, laughing our ass. I mean, we were a little substance altered, but still, like, it was an amazing promo. Like, you'd expect, like, he's not trying to be humble. He's like, you know, fuck you. I am that great. And what can you say but he's done it. He has talked more shit than anyone in MMA history, basically. And, there are guys out there that would talk a lot of trash if they were given the opportunity, but they're not as good a fighter as Conor. Like, there's never been a fighter at that level who's consistently delivered. I mean, it's probably a bit of a cliche, but this is Ric Flair, where he's basically playing heel, but he's so good at it, you cheer him, and he makes his opponents look good sometimes, but he always ends up winning, and he's a champion, and he will be the guy that people compare everyone to for a long time. Like, we've set a new level of what charisma means, and it's Conor McGregor. I know it sounds like, you know, it's overblown and, you know, it's too much effusive praise, but I watch it and I'm just like, I'm just in awe because, you know, yes, he hasn't, like I said, he hasn't run through and cleaned out divisions, but give the guy credit. There's no way. I mean, you didn't see Eddie Alvarez win the lightweight championship and then immediately cut a promo saying, "I demand to fight the welterweight champion." Conor did that. Like, the first thing he said was, "I want to move up 10 pounds and fight the best in the world." Like, that's a lot of ball. John Jones isn't doing that. Anderson Silva kind of danced around at 205, but he never made a full commitment. George St. Pierre never wanted to take that leap. Everybody else is like, that's a lot of weight. And they were correct. It is a lot of weight to jump up. But Conor just said no. It wasn't like, you know, Mighty Mouse is kind of like, oh, I'm waiting for the right offer and I'd take that super fight, but it's got to be worth a lot of money, blah, blah, blah. Conor's just like, I want the fight. He demanded to have it. And that's just nuts.
Well, on top of it, too, I mean, even if you go back to 196, and I'm playing devil's advocate to a degree here, he didn't have to fight Nate Diaz on that show. It was on short notice, you know, a week and a half, whatever it was. A lot of guys would have just said, you know what, I'll wait for RDA to get healthy and I'll try and win both belts. So he's like, you know what, nah, I'll just fight Nate Diaz in a week and a half and fight him at 170. And for somebody at his stature at that point, coming off the Aldo fight, he was already the biggest star in the UFC at that time. It's like, no one does that.
Oh, yeah.
Nobody would do that. Ronda wouldn't do that. John Jones wouldn't even do that with Chael Sonnen. Like, he would have killed Chael Sonnen on short notice, and John Jones wouldn't do it. And McGregor does. He's just, and it sounds like we're gushing over him, but he's different than anybody else who's ever done this before. He just is. And if people can't see that and don't recognize it, it's their,
oh yeah,
their jadedness.
Yeah, it's like, again, using other people as an example, granted there's very few people. Ronda would, I think Ronda in her prime might have, because she took a lot of fights, you know, real quick turnaround. But
she'd go up in weight?
No. She would not go up in weight.
Such a bad style matchup? I mean, you know what? I don't think she would.
Yeah.
It's
basically like if Ronda had went up in weight and said, all right, on 5 days notice or whatever, I'll fight Cyborg. You'd be right. Like, what? Are you kidding? And Conor's like, yeah, I'll do it. The only other person that exists like that is Donald Cerrone. And, and Cerrone's a madman who's fighting, you know, he's upset about losing 150 grand. And Conor's fighting for, like, you know, 20 million or some shit like that. Like, the balls, like, it reminds me of the poem by Rudyard Kipling about, you know, he wrote the poem to his son. The title of the poem is If, and it's basically like, I hope that you can be the kind of guy that can take everything you've ever earned and bet it on a single roll of the dice, and if you lose, you're still okay. Like, then you will be a man. And Conor's kind of that guy. Like, he has developed the ability that he will fight anyone, anywhere, anytime, at any weight. And again, the only guy like that is Cerrone, but Cerrone, it's such lesser stakes. It's, I mean, good gosh. You'd like to think that most people have the balls to do that, but you wouldn't even fault anybody. You know, you can barely fault people for not wanting to move up in weight, extra weight, fight a guy who's a terrible stylistic matchup, and on short notice, and just do it over and over again. I mean, he did that. It wasn't, you know, Nate wasn't the first time that, you know, Chad Mendes, that was a disaster waiting to happen. You go from a guy like Jose Aldo, who is a perfect opponent for Conor, more or less, to stocky, short, power wrestler, which everybody's like, oh, that's the toughest matchup for you, Conor. And Conor's like, eh, fuck it. I'll do it. I only got, you know, literally, like, Conor. Because I remember writing a column about that right when it happened, and at the time I said like a $45 million gamble, and I kind of tried to figure out how much future Conor pay-per-views would be worth, and it's probably about that much. Like, he's putting that kind of money on the line, but you know what? When he comes out afterwards and says, I win an equity stake in the UFC, which he's not going to get, but if anybody ever could, the dude is just more than proven that he's different. And maybe, you know, if he stays at lightweight, there's some tough matchups. if I was him, I'd avoid Khabib at all costs. But for right now, I mean, you just got to tip your hat sometimes. Just go, that's the man. That's the greatest not the greatest of all time. I think, you know, in all fighting, especially MMA, a consistent long record of dominance is very important. George St. Pierre, yep. And Anderson Silva, to a lesser degree, Fyodor. But Conor, you know, he's closing in on that kind of territory.
Yeah, I mean, athletically as a fighter, I mean, I don't see him like top 10 all time yet. But total package, again, part of the game isn't always about winning fights and grinding out decisions. Part of it's getting asses in seats and getting people to buy pay-per-views. It depends on what school of thought you're coming from. Is this all sport? Is it all business? Is it a combination? When you combine the two of them, he might be the greatest of all time.
Yeah,
he's certainly the biggest draw.
Like
he's a dual champion. If you combine the two, there's a certain argument where you could call him the greatest of all time.
Yeah, not that anyone probably gives a shit or is listening. But he's kind of transitioning from Muhammad Ali to Sugar Ray Robinson. Like, he's not Sugar Ray Robinson yet. That's still George St. Pierre or Anderson Silva. But he's already the Muhammad Ali of MMA. Him or Ronda. And, you know, he's transitioning from the guy who is really super great in the ring, but, you know, goes to a different stratosphere. I think I say stratosphere. That's not only one fucking layer of the atmosphere. A different level, you know, popularity-wise, but, you know, the hardcore insider people will be like, yeah, he was really good, but he wasn't as good. Like, you know, if you don't follow boxing, you think, oh, Muhammad Ali was the greatest of all time. But if you really follow boxing, people are like, Willie Pep or Sugar Ray Robinson or any of the smaller guys. But Conor's closing in on those guys also. It's, shit, after what he did this past 2 years, I watched Khabib fight, and we'll obviously get to him, and I thought,
sure.
Oh my gosh, Khabib's unstoppable. This is a freak of nature. But if Conor beats him, I would be like, okay. Like, I'm almost not going to be surprised by anything. I mean, if he went up to 170, I mean, the way that Woodley fights, I think anybody that doesn't just blitz him with a takedown is in trouble. And I don't know why guys don't just dive on a takedown, because he is not that good at wrestling.
Right.
He stuffed Eddie's takedowns, but Eddie had half-assed shots when he was a little dazed and he was out of his element. I say you just power that dude through, grind him out, make it a Randy Couture fight, you know.
Brock versus Mark Hunt.
Kind of, yeah. This is going to be really random. Out of left field, and it'll never happen. But like the kind of guy that can beat Conor would be Nick Lentz.
Yeah.
Like just a tough dude who just says, I'm going to fight ugly. I'm going to just hit you. I'm going to wear you down. I'm not going to box. I'm just going to just make this a wrestle fuck type of match. And I can't imagine Nick Lentz ever gets a title shot, unfortunately, because I love the dude. But it's going to take, I think, somebody with, you know, a strong wrestling background and a strong mental base, somebody that doesn't get sucked into the game. Because, you know, Eddie can wrestle, and we saw him follow a great game plan in the past with Pettis and Melendez and all these guys. But somehow he's in there with Conor, and I don't know if Conor's mesmerizing, if there's something that he does that people aren't used to, whatever it is. Like, you know, it sounds kind of funny, but it's like, there's no reason that Eddie should have been fighting the way he fought. He stayed a distance with a guy who had a 5-inch reach advantage and who had clipped him multiple times, and yet he just kept fighting the same way. It's the dumbest way to fight.
So from here, I mean, post-fight, not right in the cage, but at the presser afterwards, Conor announced that his girlfriend's pregnant, so it looks like he's going to take a little bit of time off. He didn't say how long or really how this would all play out. But two things we got to address here before we move on. Well, what do you see next for McGregor? I know you mentioned Nate. Do you think that's where they'll go? Or does he really need to defend that featherweight belt next if he's going to keep both of them? He says he wants to keep both, and it's like he's fought three times outside of the featherweight division. Does he need to go back down there next?
Well, I think the most important thing to consider is Eddie's little dig when he said that Conor's having two kids and his girlfriend doesn't have twins. What an awesome. That and the line when Eddie said, "You took welfare. A real man doesn't take welfare. You took money from single mothers." I'm like, oh, that's a damn good line until you get your ass knocked out. too bad it didn't get as much play as it deserved.
I found that funny too. Nobody really mentioned that anywhere, and that's a little bit of a news story that Connor's got two kids coming and not one.
Presuming that he does, yeah. I'm like, that's a damn good line, and like that's the kind of line that, you know, Connor likes to kind of straddle the whole personal, you know, going over the line. I'm like, Eddie fucking took it right to him there. Good for you, but as far as going forward, yeah, it's weird.
Because there's a lot of options. It's a question of which is the best one and what's Connor want to do.
I mean,
if he wants to keep both belts, he should defend the featherweight belt. It's been a year now. It's like it's time to go back down and do that. And presuming he does that, he's got to fight Aldo again for the interim title. Then as far as contenders in the lightweight division, you've got Tony Ferguson and Khabib. And then he's also talking about maybe fighting Woodley at 170. So of those four or five options, what do you think is most likely?
Yeah, it's weird. Or eight. Like, if he goes down back to featherweight, the only person he can fight is Jose Aldo. It would be absurd, even though I'd rather see him fight the winner of Cub and Pettis, if it's Pettis in particular, because it's just a fresh matchup. There's just no justification for having an interim champion who doesn't get the first crack at the real champion. That'd just be really, right, really dumb. So him and Jose is basically his only fight at 45. At 55, good gosh, the way Khabib looked, he put on the performance of a lifetime, cut a good promo. For limited language he has, he looked great. Ferguson is also there, so he basically got those two, and then Nate Diaz is always the wild card, or he moves up to 170 and faces. Well, the thing is, I think that Woodley and Wonderboy are definitely going to fight again at 170, so that's probably off the table. And I don't know.
Obviously you'll make money fighting Nate again, doing the trilogy fight, but do you really want to fight Nate again?
Yeah. To me,
if you had to pick, would you probably pick Ferguson if you could pick anybody between those three guys?
If I could pick any, if I'm Connor, I would think probably the best course of action is Jose Aldo. Because Ferguson's weird and difficult to prepare for. Jose is conventional in everything he does. He's an amazing fighter, but you've beaten him before, and you can say I'm defending two titles and all this shit. But yeah, to me, you don't fight Nate next. Nate is your ace in the hole. You do a title fight at 145. If you win, great. You do a title fight at 155. If you win, great. But even if he loses both of those fights, He still has Nate, and that's still a big money. So you wait on Nate, you basically have given yourself three gigantic pay-per-views. But if you fight Nate next, you might lose 155, you might lose your title, and lose the big Nate Diaz payoff. So that's just a limit. That's two for the price of one. And then all you've got left at that point is probably Jose Aldo. And, you know, yes, he beat Jose the first time, but I'm never gonna, you know, say that Jose Aldo's a cakewalk. So he's got a lot of options. I think that the most dangerous one of all is Khabib. That's the one I think I would most avoid, because that dude is a fucking freak. So I would say you either go with Jose Aldo or Nate Diaz. I think it's one of those two, because I think that Khabib, just fighting on the same show as Connor, got all that attention. Ferguson's obviously great. I love him, but Khabib has just got that undefeated record, and he's just a murdering machine. And we kind of criticized him in the past for, because he didn't have that huge, huge win. Well, he sure as shit's got one now. So, and it's a terrible matchup for Connor. Like, it's one thing to lose to Nate. The way he lost to Nate, yeah, it sucked, but he still went out on his shield. He showed lots of offense at times, and he just kind of gassed out. Khabib's the kind of guy that could just make Conor look like an embarrassment. embarrassment for 25 minutes. And that's not something that if you're Conor, you really want to have to deal with. Like, there's losing, and then there's losing to Khabib, where people are going to go, what the fuck just happened? Like, this dude's not like at
people
that
are,
level.
People are doing with Eddie Alvarez right now.
Basically, yeah.
Conor does not want to be Eddie Alvarez. What am I not supposed to say? Co-main? Is that bad? The semi-main?
Semi-main, yeah. Co implies okay. Equality.
I forget. I don't mean to upset you. Tyron Woodley went to a majority decision with Stephen Thompson. Scores were 47-47, 47-47, and 48-47. Clearly a close fight. If you're going to watch any round from this fight, it should probably be the fourth round. Woodley rocked Thompson, nearly got a submission win with a guillotine. It looked like he was going to get it, but somehow Wonderboy survived and actually ended up getting on top at the end of the round and landing some ground and pound of his own. As far as the scoring goes, it's a little weird because to me, Woodley clearly won the first round and the fourth round. And then the question is, how did you score those two rounds? Was one of them 10-8? Were they both 10-8? Because the other three rounds, the second, third, and fifth, were Thompson's rounds, I felt, and there wasn't a lot of debate about that. To me, the big thing with this fight was just Thompson showed a lot of heart and grit. I mean, he got his ass handed to him in that fourth round, and it looked like he was done. And he held on and came back and managed to win the fifth round and make this thing a draw. The other takeaway I had was both guys looked better than kind of expected for their weaknesses. Like, Woodley was competitive on the feet with Thompson, where you would have thought Thompson would have had a bigger edge. And then Thompson was able to kind of hang with Woodley on the ground, too. I mean, he was in that guillotine and got out in reverse position and got on top when he probably did not have his wits about him. So those were my big takeaways from the fight, just the grit and heart that Thompson had. And both of them ended up being the more well-rounded fighters that I kind of thought going in, but a lot of people were calling it this wrestler versus striker matchup. It didn't really pan out that way, I didn't think.
Yeah, I mean, far and away the most entertaining... The fourth round was the most entertaining thing, sure. After that, it was Bruce Buffer and the commission somehow screwing up the scores. And
yeah.
I remember when they read the scores, and then they said, and your winner, Tyron Woodley. I looked at my brother, I go, dude, I know I've been smoking a little bit of weed here, but like, what the fuck? Like, this doesn't make any sense. I'm like, I'm pretty sure I just heard scores that said this is a majority draw, but they're saying he's the winner. And I don't know what's going on. I'm like, looking around, I'm like, what the hell is going, like, what, like, I was so confused. I'm like, what's going on in the world? And then when we have a correction. The first time I've ever heard that. So good for you, Madison Square Garden. It was just hilarious, you know, that they screwed up addition. Like, these are grown men that can't use a calculator, which is
pathetic. Well, they had the scores right, but they didn't call it a majority decision. They said,
They said
a split decision win,
yeah,
for Woodley. So they had the scores right. They said 47-47, 47-47, and 48-47, and still champion by whatever split decision.
Yeah,
Tyron Woodley.
It was just weird, but
it was screwed up. It was screwed up, but
it was entertaining at least.
Yes.
But as far as the fight itself, yeah, both guys really showed a lot. I give Stephen Thompson a lot of credit for surviving the guillotine that Woodley locked on, because there used to be a time when an arm and guillotine was ineffective, but people figured out the technique behind it, and they're really good with it these days. And the way that Wonderboy was defending it, by what he basically was doing was stacking Tyron Woodley really, really hard. And that basically what that does is that takes away Woodley's hips, because when you get the guillotine, it's not just your arms matter, but you also use your hips to extend the guy, flatten him out, and part of the guillotine actually works because the guy's on his knees, and you're keeping his posture low, which puts more pressure on the neck. So you stack the guy and put a lot of pressure on the guillotine doer. You basically stack him on the back of his neck. But it's a real fine line there, because there's a lot of times guillotines and triangles where a guy doesn't have it in, but if you move basically a fraction of an inch the wrong way, it's in. And you have to not only defend it, not only be cognizant of his ability to change position, but to be composed within yourself and to not overextend. And for Wonderboy to do that, I mean, I know it sounds like it's weird to heap a lot of praise on a guy for not getting choked, but, that was, especially given that he had just had the shit knocked out of him, a lot of credit to Wonderboy for surviving a guillotine that I think a lot of guys could have easily been tapped by. A draw fight is the correct decision, in my opinion. I wish more fights were draws. I wish judges were encouraged to do 10-10 rounds. I understand that it'll never happen because nobody wants to tune into a main event and get a bunch of draws over and over again. Like, that's part of the problem it's one of the problems that soccer has in America. Like, I can watch a great match, it'll end up in a 0-0 tie, and I'll be like, that was amazing. People are like, but nobody won. Like, we're not used to, like, Americans are just not conditioned for draws, because our sports all have conclusions. Like, you play baseball until it's over. You play basketball until it's over. Football, we've had like two draws this year, which are freaky and weird. But for the most part, football has a conclusion. But the reality is that a lot of fights, when that fight was over, nobody can really tell me that one guy was better than the other. They both, to me, said, yeah, we're equal. And I like when it's kind of revealed on the scorecards that they are equal. So I'm fine with that. And they both raise their profile. And they can probably fight maybe Super Bowl. Well, no, that's a Fox Sports 1 show. Sometime in February, I would imagine. February, March, they should be ready to go. And I think they can headline a pay-per-view on their own. That's how good and impressive the fight was.
So you would run it back right away?
Yeah, I think you almost have to. I mean, okay. How do you look at Wonderboy and be like, well, you had a draw with the champion, but you're back to the end of the line, and it's not like there's anybody at 170 besides Damian Maia who's really knocking down the door.
Yeah.
And even, I mean, like, I love Damian Maia. I want to see him get a title shot, but he's still under the radar as far as your general public is concerned. And if you ask him, do you want to see this guy who had fought at middleweight, lost a title shot there, come down to welterweight, has looked amazing, or do you want to see the guy that just had a draw against a champion and actually won more rounds than the champion? I think a lot of people are going to be more interested in Stephen Thompson. Plus, he speaks English and Damian Maia doesn't. Like, that's just part of the deal, you know? He's a little more relatable, especially if, as I tweeted out, he's the Todd Marinovich of MMA. You know, his father just basically bred him for this moment, gave him this dumbass nickname, Wonder Boy, including the music. I think he's been called that since he's like 15. It's really creepy in a way, but, whatever. It's worked, so I can't fault it. So, I definitely want to see those two fight again.
Prior to that, we had a women's strawweight championship. So the show had three title fights. Joanna Jędrzejczyk defeated Karolina Kowalkiewicz via unanimous decision, 49-46, 49-46, and 49-46. Competitive fight. Joanna was generally the quicker, crisper striker, I thought. Karolina did rock Joanna in the fourth round, but couldn't really capitalize and take advantage of it. Kind of what you thought. Joanna's just a little bit better, a little more solid, a little quicker. Not a whole heck of a lot there to say besides that.
Yeah, it was actually a fight that was kind of lackluster, but then it got really good in that fourth round. It was just like, holy shit, Karolina almost knocked her out. Like, that was some really hard shot. But Joanna, give her all the credit in the world, she survived. She won the decision. I thought she deserved the decision win. It was kind of one of those fights where, and I think I wrote it at the time on the play-by-play, of basically Joanna was beating her in a 50-mile race by winning by squeaking ahead like a mile at a time. Like, she was better, but it wasn't like she was leaps and bounds better like we've seen her. Uh-huh. She was just consistently a little bit ahead, and she was slowly pulling away. But in the end, she would obviously win. But when you're watching, you're kind of like, this is kind of close here, but, you know, she deservedly got the victory.
Yeah. Carolina, to me, she can take a shot, man. She was getting lit up with some combinations here and there. It didn't really even seem to faze her. She kept moving forward, but it wasn't like she had the offensive output that Joanna did. So, what do you think's next for Joanna? Fun fact, I'll give you real quick after I cut you off, I guess. This is a 7th win in the UFC for Joanna. It's a new record for a woman's fighter. She's got the most wins in the UFC for a woman ever. Fun fact.
Huh.
So who does she fight next?
She has the most wins in the UFC ever for a woman?
Yep. She's 7-0.
What was Ronda at?
I think 6.
Wow. I'm pulling up the UFC's rankings right here, right now, because I have a pretty good idea of who I think she should fight next, but I just want to double check it.
Thinking Andrade?
Yeah, I think, Jessica Andrade. She doesn't fight this weekend, does she?
That's Gadela.
Yeah, okay, yeah, it's whatever. Yeah, Jessica Andrade, just because how she's looked lately has just been scary good. When I look at the rest of these fighters, actually, these aren't even in ranking. So, way to go, UFC. I would say Jessica Andrade just looked like a fucking murderer lately. So, I can't really argue against her. Not Jessica Andrade. Am I thinking Jessica Andrade or Claudia Gadelha? No, she beat Gadelha. So, Jessica Andrade. I mean, yeah, Rose is coming off a loss. Carla Esparza has a win, but she hasn't looked super impressive. Jessica Aguilar. I mean, it basically, I think, has to be Jessica Andrade at this point.
Me too.
She's scary. She's scary good. She's one of the few I'm like, oh shit, if she fights Joanna, she might beat her, 'cause she's a physical presence. She can box great. She's got a great ground game. So, she might be able to pull it off. And, I'd actually really, really be looking forward to that fight too.
Prior to that, we had basically a number one contenders fight for the middleweight title where Yoel Romero defeated Chris Weidman via TKO at 24 seconds of the third round. Another competitive fight here. That was kind of the theme of the evening on the main card, except for Tate, but we'll get to that. I had Weidman winning the first where he even got a couple of takedowns on Romero. And the second, Romero was more aggressive, took Weidman's back, and had a few takedowns of his own. So after the first two, I had it tied, and it kind of looked like it could go either way. It was competitive. Weidman was hanging with him, and Romero was kind of picking up the pace. Then in the beginning of the third, Romero just drills Weidman with his flying knee as Weidman went in for a takedown. Weidman was rocked, gushing blood. Just like out of the side of his head. I don't even know where the blood was coming from, but it was like a faucet. It was a brutal, brutal knee that ended it. Post-fight, Romero calls out Bisping. Bisping's up like in, the press box, yelling down at Romero, flicking him off. It built that fight, despite the fact that in the past Bisping said he would never fight Romero due to, the PED failure. But it looks like that's the direction UFC's heading. Rogan even called Romero the number one contender in the cage. Thoughts on how all this went down?
Yeah, with the obvious caveat of Romero failing an out-of-competition test, which does cloud what he's done recently. I mean, he just beat Jacare and he just beat Chris Weidman. What else do you really want him to do? He's earned a title shot more than anybody, I would say. He's also, people are like, oh, I want to see Bisping fight him. It's like, do you like Bisping? Because if you do, you don't want to see that fight. That's a disaster of a fight for Michael Bisping.
You think?
With that wrestling? Oh, yeah. I mean, that second round, there was a moment there when Weidman shot and Romero just went to elite wrestling mode, sprawled and basically did like a cartwheel to take the back. I'm like, oh, shit. And there were a couple times when Romero shot where you're like, oh, when you're one of the greatest wrestlers literally of all time and you really put your mind to it, yeah, you take a dude down. Plus with his just explosive striking. I mean, on the feet, Bisping is technically better, but Romero's just got so much power, and the knee he landed, when it happened, I'm like, I've seen this before, and I finally just fucking realized what it was. It was Takanori Gomi versus Half Gracie in Pride. It was exactly the same thing where Half shot in and Gomi timed the knee perfectly. It was just like, it was one of the most brutal knockouts I've ever seen. It was, you could see in the slow motion replay. Oh my gosh. It was disgusting because, these guys are tough. Obviously, professional cage fighters are some of the toughest human beings on the planet, especially high level wrestlers who are really mentally tough. And you could see that not only did the knee hurt wobble Weidman, but he was in pain because in the slow motion, he was turtling up and you could see him almost crying and screaming in anguish as he covered up. And, he wasn't good after that. And it was just that one in a million timing. It just happened. So the guy's shooting in as fast and as hard as he can. And you're jumping forward as hard and as fast as you can and throwing a knee as hard as fast as you can. And it's like, and when that shit happens, it's like, oh gosh.
It's like a head on car collision.
Yeah, it really is. It's like two guys playing chicken and nobody quit. And except for one guy was driving an SUV and the other guy was in a VW Bug. It was sickening. It was just like, holy shit. Like, you genuinely wondered for Weidman's safety. Like, is he going to be the same after that? I'm sure he will be. It's a little bit hyperbole. But in that moment, I'm like, oh my gosh. So, Yoel Romero, for a guy who doesn't speak English and usually just talks about gay Jesus, cut a hell of a promo. I mean, no, he really, what I really liked about his promo is he kept calling Bisping a chicken. And even though it's
no, that was
That was Khabib.
That was Khabib.
Shit, that's
he kept calling him boy.
Oh, that's right.
Yoel kept calling Bisping boy.
That's right.
Which was a little.
It was weird.
I want to say condescending, but it was funny.
Yeah, but he definitely had this idea. I thought that people would fighters would pick up on things after Chael got the title shot against John Jones when he just talked his way into it. I thought that would be the tipping point when guys realized if I just talk shit, I can get a title shot. But I especially think that they've all gotten the memo now. That with seeing Conor, all these dudes are now coming out and cutting promos. You know, you got a guy like Yoel Romero, doesn't speak barely any English. He's cutting promos and trying his best to drum up interest in a fight. And it's
I liked when he, after the fight, immediately started marching around the cage, some military march and saluting the crowd.
I know what that is. Yeah, my brother asked the same thing. His nickname, Soldier of God.
Right.
So I think that's what that was about. I don't think he was trying to mock anybody.
No, I didn't think he was either, but it's just one, it's something you remember.
Yeah.
Most guys don't march around the cage after a fight like that and salute the crowd and get booed and, you know what I mean? That's not, somebody else, when you kill a guy like that, usually they show some concern. He's doing this weird, almost goose step, not see march outside the cage after the fight, just getting booed, booed merciless, because again, Weidman's the only New York fighter on the whole card in this debut show in New York. He's the only guy from New York, and he just gets destroyed, and then this Cuban guy who can't speak English is marching around the outside of the cage. It made for a memorable moment, certainly moved Romero to the front of the line for the next middleweight title shot.
It's just too bad this didn't happen 40 years ago. Can you imagine if, the height of the Cuban Missile Crisis and all this happened? The Cuban coming into New York City, America's great city, and beating the native guy and then marching around? Holy shit, that would have been people would have actually killed him. All these people are protesting, Trump would have been no! Fuck, we're gonna get that guy instead. Plus, he's black. We got a bunch of reasons. It would be the 60s when this happened, so they would have had all kinds of reasons to hate him. But, god damn. Romero can't do anything more than what he did to be a star. He's gonna have his limitations language-wise and even style-wise. He did as great a job as a human being could do, and I'll tip my hat to him as we come up to the 1-hour mark of this show already. Hint, hint.
I'm moving. In the opener, Raquel Pennington, the opener to the main card, I should say, Raquel Pennington beat Misha Tate, unanimous decision. I scored all three rounds for Pennington. Pennington just landed more on the feet, and Tate could never get anything going on the ground. To me, Tate looked slower and older. What did you think of Pennington's performance? Is she that good, or has Tate really lost that many steps?
I think Tate lost something. When I was watching the fight, I really felt like I was watching Tate not be good more than I was watching Pennington be great. And it's kind of one of those things where, and I think I did write it, I think, and I quickly wrote a little blurb about Tate, her retirement. This has been a very odd year for her because she simultaneously had the greatest success of her career, but inside the cage, she's clearly diminished. Like, Holly Holm was beating her ass until she grabbed the choke in the fifth round. So she basically was losing to Holly Holm. Obviously, Amanda Nunes smoked her, and then Raquel Pennington smokes her. So while she's on paper, like, if you look at it, you're like, well, she started the year off. She won the world championship. She headlined UFC 200, and then she was, you know, she was on the three biggest shows of the year, pretty much. Well, three of the four. And but at the same time, like, physically, she was not there. And when she retired, I actually just watched some stuff. You could see, I don't know if it's in between rounds or right after the fight, but she was talking to Brent Care, which is like, I'm done. I don't have this in me. I don't want to do this anymore. And obviously, if she had just made the decision right there and then to quit, I don't give it any credence. Fighters are emotional after a loss. It happens. But it seemed like she was more prepared to quit ahead of time. She just wasn't there. And maybe it'll sound sexist, but I think that there's a different mentality for female fighters versus male fighters where, you know, when a woman gets to be in her, once she hits 30, and they got like that kind of gray area between 30 and 35 when they kind of start thinking, this is the only time I can really, like, I have like 5 years to have a baby. Like, after 35, like, you get, you know, the chances of weird shit happening increase and all that stuff, where it's like, dudes don't have to worry about that. And so, like, right. I think a lot of, you know, if you're someone like Tate, maybe you start thinking, I want to have a family now. I want to get, you know, I want a baby. And, you know, I know, again, I know it sounds really sexist, but it's something that female fighters deal with, I think, far more than male fighters ever will deal with. Like, obviously Conor just went out and fought while his girlfriend's pregnant. There's no, you know, nobody had to worry about anything there. But if, you know, if you're Misha, you really can't just get pregnant and fight. Like, you get pregnant, that's what, 18 months probably at least between fights, even if you timed it perfectly and got knocked up right after a fight. Like, you'd have to do, you know, then apparently pregnancies last 10 months, not 9 months, I've just discovered, which is weird. And then, you know, you have to nurse the kid and take care of it for a couple months after that, and then you got to get back into training shape. So, you know, it's a process. Like, it's funny because obviously I don't have children because there is a God, but my one of my two or three friends in the world, Megan, she's having her second kid, and I've talked about her a lot, and like, I'm always
breast pumps.
Yeah, exactly. With the breast pumps last week, and like, this week she had some sort of, it starts with like H or something, like, or some sort of like mid pregnancy contractions or whatever. For fuck's sake, how the fuck does everyone know? My mother, I'm like, yeah, she's having some weird. My mom's like, oh yeah, Braxton Hicks. I'm like, how does everyone know this? Like, I'm like, this is,
we took a class before the first kid, and it was one of the few things I remembered from it.
Yeah, like, everybody knows this. I'm like, really? Your body has contractions? And then I started reading what contractions actually were, because I didn't know what contractions meant. Like, I literally thought the contractions was the vagina expanding to get ready for the baby to come out. Because they always talk about, like, she's dilated 10 centimeters. She's dilated 20 centimeters. I'm like, oh, this means the vagina must be getting wider to prepare for the baby. Now, apparently, some sort of, like, cramp-type feeling in your stomach. I'm like, I don't know anything about babies and how the female body works. And all I know is that, like, when I hear this shit, I'm like, it's total proof that God is a dude. Like, there's no way in shit that a woman is God. Because they would not do this to women. Like, guess what? You're going to have sex one time, and you might then have to spend 9 months getting really fat, and at the end of it, I'm going to probably tear a hole between your vagina and your ass, so you have one giant, you don't even have a taint anymore. You're just going to shit out a giant baby from this huge gaping hole, and if you survive, good luck. Meanwhile, the dude is out there, and he's got 9 months where he's the exact same. He can bang the shit out of everything he wants. It's totally, God must be a dude. There's no other explanation for why he would put women through this stuff, because no woman would ever design pregnancy like that. Like, why don't they give birth like marsupials? Have a little thing kind of come out of you and like carry it in a pouch. Well, it grows bigger. That makes sense. Or, you know, crap out an egg and sit on it like a reptile or whatever. But no, we're just gonna shove this 9-pound fucking thing out of your vagina. Oh, and by the way, afterwards, you know, you might not be as attractive to potential mates. While a dude, you know, can go out there. It was actually one of the things I ranted about on the podcast I may not release, which is, if you have 1,000 men and 1 woman, you can't reproduce the earth. You have 1,000 women and 1 man, you could fucking reproduce everything in about 1.5 years. That dude could just knock him out one after another. You could bang 3 or 4 chicks a day, and women can't do it. So, that has nothing to do with anything other than I think, Misha Tate wants a gangbang so she can have a baby. Yeah, you know, they don't say that on MMA Junkie, do they? Yeah, fuck you people. Yeah.
You know why these shows run long, right? So after the fight, Tate announced her retirement from MMA, said her time had passed. My favorite part of this whole thing was at the post-fight presser, Dana actually talked to the media, which is very unusual now. But he came out and answered a few questions, and he talked about his interaction with Tate backstage, and he wanted her to go to the hospital and get checked out. And Tate told him to fuck off, I don't work for you anymore, which is like the greatest thing ever, because like nobody really probably talks to Dana that way. And she has a point. It's like, I'm retired, I don't have to do what you're telling me. But she told him to fuck off. I thought that was funny.
Yeah, that was pretty good, and obviously she has to, just from athletic commission point of view, and she probably needed to go to the hospital just to get double checked and all that. But there is something kind of funny about her just saying, "Wait a second, I don't work for you. I don't have to do what you say anymore. I quit. Like, I'm done. Right. Like, you're not my boss anymore." And from Dana's perspective, like, he obviously was not asking her to do anything unreasonable. Just, hey, go to the hospital. We're going to pay for you to get checked out so you don't die in your sleep. Like, this is not like the worst thing. Like, this is not exactly Dana saying, I want you to come over and do, you know, 2 weeks of press. It's, hey, can you just go to New York General or whatever the hospital? I don't know what the hospitals are in New York. And, I don't know. I'm trying to think. I don't know. There's some hospital in New York that's famous, I'm sure. Go to, well, it's on the tip of my tongue, but I don't know what it is. I'm watching Gegard Mousasi knock the shit out of Dan Henderson. Ooh. So, yeah. Sucks to see. I mean, good for Misha for getting out while she can.
Yeah.
And
yeah, she doesn't seem like she wants to do it anymore. And you know what? She probably is burnt out. She's been, you know, one of the top 5 women stars of the last, you don't want to say decade, but the last 7-8 years anyway. And it's like, you know what? That's a grind. She's sick of it. She's probably tired. She's probably got nagging injuries. It's like, I don't need this anymore. And people say that with jobs all the time. And I think we look at it like, well, she's only 30. She's only 4 months out from winning the title. But if you don't want to do your job anymore, find another job.
Yeah,
it shouldn't be any different in MMA.
In fact, it's actually better in MMA because, you know, if you get tired of some asshole carving Harambe onto the bathroom door in a restaurant, I saw that, I'm like, that's really funny, and it makes me want to visit and just do that, just to be a dick. But, you know, if you and I get tired of our jobs, if I'm like, you know what, I'm tired of being a lawyer, I'll go do something else, like, fine. But if you're tired of being a fighter, you can't just keep pushing through because your job entails getting punched in the head a lot. Like,
sure.
Like, you have to sand down the door. Misha has to go through a training camp and then have somebody punch her in the face for 15 minutes. It's a bit of a different job, and it's really a job that if your heart's not in it, you probably, it's an old adage. If your heart's not in it, you can't do it unless you're, I don't know, some super freak who could just coast through things. But even
BJ Penn.
Yeah, kind of. But even then, like, you know, I mean, you saw what happened with BJ Penn, like, near the end. Like, there are, If it was Japan, she'd be okay. They just feed her a bunch of, you know, tomato cans or something like that. And you can be Mirko Krokop fighting some Mongolian dude. There's a Mongolian showed up at my gym the other day. He's a brown belt. And, like, all he could do is wrestle. I'm like, and he's wearing wrestling shoes with a gi. And I was like, what the fuck is going on? He's like, I'm from Mongolia. And all I could think of is, I don't want to roll with you. You're from Mongolia. I feel like you're really, really tough. Like, nobody's from Mongolia who's not tough. Like, your summers are cold as shit. And you people kill fish with your bare hands or something like that. Like, that's my image of Mongolia, which is not totally far off, because my mom's best friend, Amy, who's, I've talked to him in the past, world-renowned neuroscientist, she takes trips around the world to see whatever the rare form of eclipse is, I think the solar eclipse or whatever. She one time went to the middle of nowhere China to see this eclipse, and people walked up to her and touched her hair because she's blonde, and they had never seen blonde people. They had never seen blonde hair, and she was like this anomaly. And like, it's kind of weird, like, in 2016, like, we don't really think of it, but it's like, there are people in this world that are just so remote and cut off from what we do. You know, here you and I are using Skype to do some dumbass fucking podcast on a website that more or less pays its bills based on fake movie previews while I watch UFC Fight Pass in the background as my dogs lay on my Avengers sheets. And, meanwhile, there's people who've never seen blonde hair. Like, what the hell? This is a really weird planet.
In the MS1 prelims, Frankie Edgar defeated Jeremy Stevens via unanimous decision.
I can talk about how I accidentally insulted retarded people also.
Let's keep this moving. Stevens, what happened? Edgar won. He won by decision. Edgar got rocked in, I want to say, the second round,
yeah.
With a nice head kick from Stevens. But Edgar, again, I want to say it was like the Joanna fight, but kind of similar. Edgar was just a little quicker, a little more active, used his wrestling a lot to take Stevens down. Stevens just couldn't land that one big shot that he's known for. My big question is, where does Edgar go from here? What's left for him? Obviously, he's not getting a title shot at featherweight. He's way too small for lightweight. Should he try and make the cut down to bantamweight, you think?
I don't really know. Like, when I'm watching this fight, I was like stunned at how much bigger Jeremy Stevens looked. Like, there was like a weight class difference. I'm like, holy shit. Yeah, at the same time, Frankie's basically a god at 145, except for Jose Aldo. I guess he could just keep fighting and hope that after Aldo and McGregor fight that he gets the winner. Or he goes down to 35, which, scary as it is to say, he can easily make. Maybe he does. I mean,
Edgar still would be behind, you know, Holloway and Pettis, you would think.
I think, you know what, no matter what it is, if I'm Frankie, I'd probably stay at 45 for my next fight just to see how things shake out, because it's probably a little easier to stay at 45. And then consider going on to 35, because you have obviously Cody Garbrandt fighting, and then likely John Lineker or T.J. Dillashaw next, because those are both very marketable fights, presuming that Lineker can make weight, which, given how the UFC's working these days, is not a given. But yeah, Frankie's kind of in that weird no man's land where, like, I always called it the Nogueira position. It's also the Rich Franklin position, where you're better than everybody except for the champion, but that champion's got your number. And there's nothing you can do except for, you're an incredibly great fighter. You could beat everybody else, but you can't beat the best of the best. But you're not like you're dying in there or anything. But, you know, Frankie's actually a guy that I really hope – I know he's a competitor, but I wish he would retire, because he's taken – a lot of punishment. I mean,
those Gray Maynard fights.
Yeah, and the Maynard fights. I mean, Jose Aldo brutalized him. Jeremy Stevens really hurt him bad in that second round. Frankie's basically just too tough for his own good. But at the same time, you know, you never want to say, oh, you should retire, because I don't know his life, but just everything we know about chronic traumatic encephalopathy, some guy on the website wrote a really, really good article about it. it's just like, dude, don't, you got a wife, you got a kid, you got kids, like, and you probably know, obviously you know better than I do, you know, something about having kids, I don't know, it seems like, I don't know if it's like good or bad for fighters. Like on the one hand, like you think fighters like think, I want to be there for my kid, I don't want to be screwed up, but I think it may also drive them to say, like that crazy, I have to be, I have to provide, I have to do everything I can, it doesn't matter if I die. Like,
to me, honestly, to me, it, I mean, I'm clearly not a fighter, but I would find it more of a distraction. It's one more thing pulling you away from, you know, to be the best at anything, I think, you kind of have to have a singular focus. When you're coming home from training, you got two kids, you got, you know what I mean? You're tucking them in every night. It would pull you away. Well, and it's just like, one more distraction.
I was more thinking along the lines of, like, as a father, you probably have to, pretending you're a fighter, do you think, okay, I need to be mental, like, I need to be healthy so I can be there for my kid, or do you think, I need to make as much money as I can to provide for my kid? And I feel like a lot of men would take the latter route, because we don't, like, as men, like, it's kind of like we think we're weak or whatever, be like, I need to mentally be there for my kid. Like, we don't think in those terms, whereas, like, I can make money for my baby to go to college. That makes a lot more sense. Like, oh, I can be, here's 20 grand I just made. My kid gets to go to Boston University for a year and lose at Notre Dame in football if they play. Probably not right now in Notre Dame, because Notre Dame sucks. But, you know, in reality, the kid probably needs his dad around to be, you know, not a vegetable who's like drooling on himself as he graduates from high school, but guys are stupid. We don't think that way.
Yeah. It could go either way, I guess. To me, I mean, it depends what you're getting paid and what your bills are like. What's your mortgage? I mean, it's all of that. It's like, is money tight? All right, I got to take this fight and win a fight. I mean, that's a story of all fighters, kind of. Going longer than they should have. They spent too much money. They didn't save up. So I think it depends on the situation and every guy.
Yeah, it's
Connor does it. If Connor just stopped buying cars, he'd never have to fight again.
Yeah,
and he could pay for his kids fine. But for some reason, I get this feeling that Connor doesn't have a huge bank account based on his Rolls Royces and mink coats and the way he spends his money. But somebody like Frankie Edgar, who's probably had, you know, some nice six-figure paydays and might be saving up his money if Ali Abdelaziz isn't extorting it, he might be okay.
Yeah,
you know, I think he owns a pizza place or something. Maybe he's got some other business ventures going where he's got some income coming in. But yeah, I mean, he's taking a beating. He's got kids. He's always been undersized, fighting bigger dudes. It wouldn't bother me if he called it quits either, but I still think he wants that one more title win.
Yeah, and honestly, you know, again, Frankie, Connor, sadly, or I don't know, sadly, but he probably does have money in the bank because that dude's making so much fucking money. Like, he's right now making so much money, it's tough to spend it all. Though, when you go to New York City, you have two Rolls Royces. As he made it apparent, although I think I'm sure he rented them. Frankie does seem like a much more low key guy, and he's been on top for so long, he's making good money, but it's also kind of one of those things where, like,
you gotta live within your means. That's the bottom line.
But I think it's really tough for people to understand what that, especially athletes, because most athletes are historically are really stupid. But it's like, in theory, if say you're a professional football player, you don't have to be good or anything. But if you play 3 years in the NFL, you should have enough money to last the rest of your life as long as you're willing to live in a modest house. You can't live in a giant, you know, I was going to say Cape Cod, but that's not it. Martha's Vineyard. Like, you can't live in Martha's Vineyard and, you know, have a multi-million dollar house and all those taxes. But if you live in just a regular, nice little suburb, you have a house that costs like $300,000 or whatever, you're fine if you have that kind of money. But these guys, they're making, you know, $500,000, $1 million a year. They want to spend it all. And they don't realize, like, yeah, you're making a lot more money than most people do at 25. But And when you're 50, you'll make nothing. And everyone else will see their earning power hit its peak. And, you know, Frankie, I hope, is the kind of guy that would save his money and doesn't need it. And having said all that, now that I really think about it, I think the best course of action for him is just to stay at 145, keep beating dudes, and basically hope that you get the Conor fight, because then you know you've got your true, no matter what, I'm making multiple seven figures payday coming to me. And that's, you know, red panty night times a thousand. And red panties are very, apparently red panties are where it's at. I did not know that. When I was married for all 6 months, I didn't see any fucking red panties. So I don't know what's up with red panties, but I guess that's the new thing.
Speaking of red panties, Khabib Nurmagomedov might be getting his first pair, because he defeated Michael Johnson via submission at 231 of the third round. We've been talking off and on about Khabib throughout the show, but my two big takeaways were Khabib's wrestling is truly impeccable, the best at lightweight, some of the best I've ever seen, probably. He took Johnson down at will, passes guard, gut side control, knee on belly, just dominated Johnson. Like, it was two different levels of grappling. Johnson isn't known for his wrestling or his jiu-jitsu by any stretch, but it's not like he's some joke. He's a top 10 lightweight who's been around and in the game a long time. And it was just a very, very impressive performance by Khabib. So that's my first takeaway. His wrestling's unreal. My second takeaway is that Khabib's stand-up isn't that great. Considering he's undefeated and the number one contender in the lightweight division. Johnson, when they were on the feet, he landed several nice shots on Khabib, and Khabib kind of, I want to say he got rocked, but he took a step back a couple times where it was like, Khabib's got to get this fight to the ground or he's going to lose it. Post-fight, Khabib called out McGregor, called him a chicken, yelled a little bit. I don't know what language he was speaking, if he speaks Russian or if that was some kind of Arabic.
I'm guessing it's Russian, yeah.
Yeah, I would have thought so too. But he was going back and forth, broken English, Russian, calling McGregor a chicken, even though McGregor hadn't even fought yet and won the title. In between rounds, he was yelling at Dana White that he wanted a title shot, screaming at him. So Khabib, impressive performance, cut the promo, put the weird Dagestan wig on his head, did the whole thing, put it on Rogan. So he certainly made a case for himself to get the next lightweight shot and probably leapfrogged Ferguson in by doing that.
Yeah, I basically had the exact same takeaways that you did, which was that the first round in particular, the first half of the first round, Michael Johnson was on a different level. Like, he was lighting up Khabib with all kinds of strikes, and I'm watching this going, if Johnson's doing this, Conor will kill him. And I'm like, holy shit, Michael Johnson's really damn good, and he had a couple good sprawls. But eventually Khabib, you know, once he gets a hold of you, he took Johnson down with basically like one arm a couple of times. And on the mat, I mean, I've seen him off his back. He's got good work. But his top game is so heavy and so technical. His ability just to punch, I mean, he had ground and pound that it's really Fedor-like. And he was, you know,
even the way he was like tying Johnson up and like his control.
Yeah, he would pin an arm behind the back, and just, they were arm punches, but they had so much power despite being arm punches. And yeah, and then I liked the post fight promo, because when he called him a chicken, I thought that's more of an insult than almost anybody else can levy, because like that's all he knows to say. Like, if you or I called Conor McGregor a chicken, people would be like, really? That's kind of some weak shit. Be like, yeah, I probably should call him like a punk-ass motherfucker or something like that. But when you barely speak English, you're just thinking, what's the biggest insult? That's the biggest insult he could come up with. Like, that's like you and I being like, you fucking dirty inbred cunt or something like that. Like, for Khabib, it's chicken. And yeah, and I actually do know that he spoke Russian, because I have friends of mine that are Muslim, and one of them messaged me, goes, oh, this guy Khabib, he's Muslim, look at that, he's so great. I'm like, yeah, I know who Khabib is. And she's like, I think he praised Allah afterwards. And I'm like, yeah, he probably did. And the fact that, because she's from Pakistan, he's from America, but That's right, everyone. I said Pakistan, just like President Obama does, because I'm intelligent and well-learned and well-read. Although my favorite thing of all of it was, you could tell the Khabib at one point, like early on in his promo, he goes, I want to thank, and he points to the sky, and he paused, and he said God instead of Allah.
Yeah.
And I'm like, because I remember asking my friend, I went to high school with him, but he converted to Islam sometime during law school. Actually, we went to law school together too. And I actually asked him, I go, when you pray, like, do you use the word God or use the word Allah? Because they're obviously just the same. Allah is just God in Arabic. And he goes, I guess it depends if on the setting and all that. And I've always found that kind of fascinating because his wife, who's an American but of Pakistani descent, always says Allah. And I just, when Khabib said that, I'm like, did he stop and be like, I probably shouldn't say Allah because I might get in trouble here, especially in New York City, which should be tolerant, but, you know, they had that whole 9/11 thing. So,
heard about that.
You know, it's been going around. It's kind of a big deal, I guess, huh? I wasn't really paying attention at the time, but, yeah, I guess America doesn't like Muslims, and they're all going to have to register now, according to Donald Trump, even though people are all freaking out. And I'm like, maybe Trump was just talking about the census. We all have to register with the census. So I don't think that's what Trump's talking about, but it'd be funny if you what. Also, as an aside, I really want Donald Trump to be sworn in. Instead of putting his hand on a Bible, I want him to put his hand on the Art of the Deal. I think that'd be so fucking funny. Like I want Trump to be a good president as far as like what he does policy wise. Like, I don't want, like, you know, rounding up brown people and creating like a Nazi state or anything like that. But I definitely want him to be full Trump the whole time. I want him to put the word Trump on the fucking White House gates. I want him to just be promoting his steaks. I want like every state dinner to be like, guess we're having Trump steaks here tonight, and you're all going to stay at the Trump hotel and all these things. Like, I want him to just be as Trumpian as possible. If we have to have 4 years of this nut job, I want him to go full nut job.
On the undercard below these fights, most of these aren't a big deal. Tim Bosch beat Rafael Natal.
No one cares.
Vicente Luque beat Bilal Muhammad. Jim Miller beat Thiago Alves.
Fat Thiago.
Decision. In a catchweight fight at 162.6 pounds, new division. And then the opener was Liz Carmouche defeating Caitlin Chookagian via split decision. Fun fact, Liz Carmouche, first MMA fight ever at MSG, and also the first women's fight ever in the UFC when she fought Ronda Rousey.
Yeah, actually, I thought about that, and it was kind of like in a good way as far as how far I think society in general has progressed. Because when you think of, like, you know, cage fighting fans, they're probably not like the most progressive thinkers, but think about like the fact that it the biggest show ever, the first fight featured, you know, a very prominent lesbian, and the first fight ever on the pay-per-view also featured a lesbian, and nobody cared. Nobody mentioned it. It wasn't a big deal. And that's what progress is. Progress is like nobody talks about, like, oh, John Jones was the first black champion or some shit like that. Like, nobody cares. We care about him being a coke snorting drunk driver or whatever, but nobody cares about his race anymore. Same, you know, in the NFL, like, there's a little bit of, I think, sometimes with the quarterbacks, but that's more or less being erased. But for the most part, people don't really care, and I think it's really cool that, you know, basically from the get-go, I actually wrote a column about it when Carmouche fought Ronda, and it was about the idea that here we are, we have the first female fight ever, but it's also the first time we've had a prominent, known homosexual fight in the UFC. And it's in the main event, and nobody cares. Nobody made a stink out of it. And it will be different when a guy does it. Just gay men are different than lesbians. It's just society treats one differently than the other. But I thought, this is, like, nobody cares at all. Nobody even brings it up. Nobody mentions it. And I'm like, this is how the world should be. No one should give a shit what you do in the bedroom. It shouldn't matter. All I want to see is, oh, did Liz have kind of a bit of a boring fight? Yeah. But, you know, good for her. And she was a fine enough opener. And I was disappointed that nobody in New York City seemed to show up for the opening fight. like, who are you fuckers? Is this like Vegas? And then I realized it kind of is, because some of those ringside seats were going for like $50,000 or some shit. Like,
that was crazy. Well, that's how you get to $17 million with 20,000 people in the building.
God damn.
No
wonder they wanted to run Madison Square Garden.
Yeah. Prior to the, they should have, God damn it. What's the name of the stadium there? Is it MetLife? Someday they should run there in the summer.
The football stadium?
Yeah. I guess it's not New York, I guess. Is that Jersey?
It's technically Jersey, yeah. It's MetLife Stadium, yeah. The Giants and Jets home field, yeah.
You think I would know? I went to Mania there. Anyway, prior to the show, LeSean Evans was pulled from the car due to an issue with an MRI. So the fight with Kennedy was canceled, but it's been rebooked for 206. In addition, the Donald Cerrone Kelvin Gastelum fight was.
Hold on.
Okay.
There's something weird there. Like.
Okay.
I can respect that the New York State Athletic Commission, maybe they're a little new, they don't know exactly what they're doing, perhaps, but. If a guy is not medically cleared by one jurisdiction, but you believe
probably it, shouldn't be allowed to fight in another,
right? Especially like 3 weeks later. Like that's really weird to me. Like I don't like that at all. Something about that is just kind of, it speaks ill of either the UFC or the New York State Athletic Commission or the Toronto Athletic Commission. Somebody involved here ain't quite right, but at the same time, nobody seemed to think it was a big deal, which only leads me to the conclusion that there must have been something that they just wanted, like a follow-up scan, but there just wasn't like actually enough time to do it. But it's still kind of, I don't know. The UFC's always been really good about not forum shopping. Like, you know, Mike Tyson got banned from Nevada. They just had him fight in Memphis. UFC's never really done that shit. I don't think they'd be doing it for Rashad Evans versus Tim Kennedy, but at the same time, I was kind of like, I don't know. That's it's a little weird to me.
Sure. No, I get where you're coming from. Then the Donald Cerrone Kelvin Gastelum fight was also canceled because Gastelum could not even come close to making weight. He didn't even weigh in. So Cerrone will now fight Matt Brown at UFC 206.
You're happy.
206 is suddenly, well, wouldn't you rather see Matt Brown fight Donald Cerrone than Kelvin Gastelum? Holy shit.
Fuck yeah.
I mean, come on.
Oh my gosh, fuck yeah.
Gastelum fight. I'm glad the Gastelum fight didn't happen, to be honest, because it would have made this show even longer. And on top of it, it was a sucky fight for Cerrone. I mean, I don't want to see Cerrone fight Gastelum. I just don't. But Matt Brown, yeah, that's an awesome fight.
Yeah, I'm really glad. Like, I felt horrible for Cerrone because he was basically like the first guy he booked on the show, and he went from fighting Robbie Lawler to Kelvin Gastelum to nobody. He got his show money, sure, but that dude was ready, willing, and able to be part of history. He would have fought at 185, and you know he would have. I saw an interview with him. He's like, I wish he had just called me up. Shit, I would have gained some weight just to make it even. I don't care. I just wanted to fight. I'm like, that's a real, like, that's even beyond Conor crazy. And
Cerrone said he was willing to fight Tim Kennedy, but New York's got a different rule as far as the weight goes. You got to be within like a certain percentage of each guy's weight.
You got to be within 5 or 7 pounds, yeah.
It depends on the weight class, because obviously at heavyweight, that's not going to happen. Anyway, he said he would have fought Tim Kennedy, who they're going to Trump rallies together and being on each other's podcasts, and they're all buddy-buddy. And he's like, I don't care, I'll fight him. It's like, oh my God, he's an animal. So 206 looks like a pretty solid show. You've got Cormier, Rumble, Pettis Holloway, I think Choi there, the Korean Wonder Boy is fighting Cub Swanson. You've got Brown Cerrone, and now Rashad and Kennedy. That's a good main card, in my humble opinion.
Don't be humble, but I 206 is obviously it's not a huge card for the mainstream or anything like that, but for like your average fight fan, like that sex card stacked top to bottom, at least on pay per view, should be pretty damn good. There's a non-zero chance that Cerrone and Matt Brown is not awesome. Like, that will just be It's a battle of two dudes that can't take body shots. It's going to be incredible. They're so perfectly matched up with one another. And obviously we've seen the main event was good the first time they did it. Like, that's a damn good show. And, you know, fuck, UFC 207 is a damn good show also. Like, so it's like, huh, the UFC's, you know, on fire lately. Like, or maybe I just love the sport way too much. I don't know. It's maybe I'm, you know, malfunctioning as a robot.
No, it's pretty damn good right now. Last Friday, there was also a Bellator show in, of all places, Tel Aviv, Israel. Douglas Lima regained the welterweight title when he beat Andre Koreshkov by knockout at 123 in the third round. I fell asleep during the show. I don't know if you caught it.
Yeah, I watched the show. It was fine. My biggest takeaway was the fact that we had referees that were in Tel Aviv, Israel, and then they were in New York the next day.
I noticed that. Big John.
Yeah. I'm like, wow, you guys are fucking warriors. Cause like, then like, and then.
I know that was on a delay. That show wasn't live. I almost think it was the day prior, but I'm not sure on.
It very well may have been. All I know is that like, you know, they had, I can't think of his name right now, but he was Jewish and he got a big win. I don't know why, but I'm like, and I don't know where Tel Aviv is physically located, if it's like in a safe part of Israel or whatever, but I'm like, you shouldn't be running shows in fucking Israel. Like, this is like asking for a terrorist attack. Like, they fucking bomb pizza parlors and like bat mitzvahs and whatever. Like, this is an easy one to go after. And, I mean, granted, like, I would have done it just because I'd been like, yeah, I'll go to fucking Israel. Like, I'd take the fight just to sightsee and be like, hey, I saw this fake thing happened and that fake thing happened and that fake thing happened. But, you know, otherwise I'm like, I don't know, like, it's fucking Israel, man. Like, there's just some places you don't go to. Like, my mom has her friend from college went to Israel. I'm like, on purpose? Like, she didn't get paid to do it? Like, oh, she wanted to take the journey and see this and this and this. I'm like, it's just a bunch of fucking rocks. And you're just going to die because a bunch of morons think that their line in the sand is special. No, my line in the sand is special. It's like, it's all fucking dirt, poor sand, nothing grows in. This isn't the promised land. This is the one place on earth that God hated. It's a desolate wasteland that has nothing. It's the only place on earth where you can dig up oil and you don't have to worry about a natural disaster or an environmental hazard happening because all you will do is pollute some sand. They don't even have like animals in the sand. It's so barren. Oh my God, I don't know why you would go there. Fuck the whole Middle East. That's my political platform, everybody. This is why when people say, Mike, I like your idea. You should run for office. I'm like, yeah. Do you know the dumb shit I've said and written? You think I can explain away the Armenian thing? Because I'm not going to back down on it either. I'm just going to send a note to the Turkish president being like, so if you need some invisible airplanes to drop bombs, I got a couple. You just finish the job you fuckers didn't, you know. That you started back in the 1900s. Let's just get rid of all these Armenians. Anyways, everybody, we have shows this weekend.
We do. couple quick news bits, though. I'm not sure if you saw this yet. Machida has been suspended for 18 months. Did you catch this?
He got 18 months?
Yeah, I thought that would be your reaction, yeah. So here's the story.
Fuck's sake.
The suspension is retroactive to April 8th, so Machida will be eligible to fight again in October of 2017, so basically a year from now. Essentially, he declared his usage of a product containing the banned substance 7-ketodehydroepiandrosterone, also known as DHEA, which I guess may or may not have some anabolic agents. There seems to be a lot of debate about it, whether it should even be a WADA banned substance and if it's really a steroid or not. The science isn't really out on that from what I can tell. But Machida basically confirmed that he used the product, wrote it on his pre-fight form, but said he did not know whatever his supplement was contained this prohibited drug. So this wasn't a tainted supplement situation. The label said it had this DHEA on it, but Machida didn't know DHEA was actually banned. So he just put it on the form, and essentially USADA tested Machida's sample, and it came back with an elevated level for the DHEA. And USADA said that Machida's admission of the substance and his cooperation in the investigation allowed for the reduction of the two-year suspension to 18 months.
Just, did we talk, I'll confess, because I've fallen off the wagon a couple times recently. I don't remember half of last week's show. Also, yes. It went like 5 hours.
Yes.
Did we talk about my, I ranted to my brother about that, what's his face, it got penalized because he declared a substance, and they tested him, and he didn't test positive, but they still suspended the guy for like 6 months. And I'm like, you guys didn't even catch him cheating. Like, if he had just lied on his questionnaire, he would have been fine. And,
right.
Like, Machida, it's like, if a guy's admitting that he's taking shit, like, it's a weird one. I mean, we had the whole dick pill thing with John Jones, where he's obviously full of shit. He's just making something up and trying to find something that messes with his endocrine system and as an excuse. But, like, if a guy's telling you, hey, I'm taking this, and they're like, hey, this has a banned substance in it, and you're like, really? I didn't know that. It's kind of like this gray area where, on the one hand, you're a professional athlete. You know this is a big deal. You know that you have to watch what you're putting in your body. Somebody in your camp should be checking this shit. Like, it's just basic. When you're making six figures and you're paying an agent or a manager or whomever, you know, these guys are all losing 15% or whatever to agents and managers. Somebody should be asking the questions. What are you taking? What's going on? Let's double check it. And it's different than the dude that got banned, got penalized because he took a substance. And, like, the label didn't even list the anabolic agent. You had to go on the website right. to find it. Like, okay, I feel that one, fine. I don't expect guys to go online. Like, I know that supplements aren't regulated, but, like, you go to GNC, you pick up a thing of protein powder. If you look at the back, it just says protein powder, whey protein wheat, blah, blah, blah. And it doesn't list, like, you know, androstenedione or whatever and Dynabol on it. Like, there's only so much you can reasonably expect someone to do. So it's kind of weird. Like, I hate saying the guys are too, like, they're all dumb. They're fighters. They're meant to get punched in the head for a living. They're not smart people. But the guy admitted it. I don't know. Like, to me, either you cheated or you don't. Don't give me this, oh, he was nice and he helped us punish him, so we'll give him a lesser sentence. Like, I know that's how it works in the real world with, like, prosecutors. You know, if you play along, you get a lesser deal, and sometimes that works, and that's mostly, but the reason for that is because the prosecutors give you a lesser deal on a criminal charge because they're not convinced of their ability to convict on the higher charge. And in this case, though, they have the failed test results from Machida, so they have no incentive to give him a lesser penalty. Yeah, he declared it, but he still was apparently cheating. To me, it's either you give him 2 years or you give him nothing. Just lengthen, oh, we're going to cut it by 6 months or 9 months or 1 year. Like, they're just making shit up. There's no rhyme or reason to it, and it really, really bothers me. And I know it's probably because I have a legal background and I'm really big on, like, you know, stare decisis and precedent setting and all this stuff. But it's like, it shouldn't matter. The playing field is only level if everybody knows in advance what the rules are going to be. You know that in advance you can't take this supplement because maybe it'll help you, but maybe it'll also register a false positive. But if your opponent does, well, they're going to give him a lesser sentence because he was nice and declared it on his thing. No, like, it's either all or nothing on this stuff. You know, you're either a hard ass or you're a soft ass, if that's a word.
Well, tell me what you think of this other suspension that just came out today as well. Roy Nelson was given a 9-month suspension and $24,000 fine from, get this, the Brazilian Superior Justice Court of MMA for assault and unethical behavior following his knockout win over Bigfoot Silva back in September in Brasilia, Brazil. If you remember,
he kicked Big John in the ass, yeah.
Yeah, that was the night Nelson ran over and kicked Big John in the ass after the fight. The weirdest part of this one for me is, in addition, the Brazilian commission is offering Nelson the chance to reduce his punishment to a 6-month suspension and a $13,700 fine if the UFC allows him to formally apologize to McCarthy inside the octagon or during some form of press conference, preferably with McCarthy attending, before December 31st. If he does that, Nelson would be free to compete after March 29th.
I want to pause for dramatic effect, but whatever. The thing is, like, it's, I understand why Roy Nelson did what he did. I understand being frustrated in the moment, but it's one of those things where you just have to penalize a guy for touching an official. Like, you see it in basketball and football all the time. Even if it's semi-accidental, everyone knows you do not touch the official. And especially in a cage fighting environment, those guys, you know, you've got to be strict about it. Honestly, you know, 9 or 6 months, like, that's probably about right. I don't know where they get the $26,000 from. It's probably some percentage of his disclosed pay. Honestly, it's probably about a fair deal because you can't touch a referee, and you really can't touch a referee in the manner that Roy did, which was a very deliberately premeditated act. It was not heat of the moment. It was not like I'm in the middle of punching a guy and somebody touched me and I punched you. It was, I was punching someone, I stopped, I walked around, I thought about what I did, I came back, and I still hit the referee. Like, you just can't let that stuff go. You know, I don't want to see a guy get 2 years for anything like that, but I don't know about saying, no, you get less time if you step inside the octagon and apologize.
Can you imagine would the UFC even allow that? Like, they're gonna have McCarthy. It's almost like a Bellator skit. Like, McCarthy's gonna stand in the cage. Roy Nelson's gonna come out to his "I'm Fat" music and apologize to McCarthy. Like, what? That, it's like such bullshit. Like, that would never happen in a million years. The other thing on top of it is UFC could just shit can him if they wanted to. I mean, Dana said in the past Roy Nelson should be buried for this, for touching an official, a referee, whatever. And there's no way UFC would go along with that to begin with.
I think
it's just it's ridiculous.
It would be awesome as for, like, well, UFC 206 and 207 are done, but we have no idea what UFC 208 is yet. I'm guessing Mighty Mouse in some capacity. Woohoo! If they announce, like, the semi-main event, or as they say, the co-main event will be Roy Nelson apologizing. Like, this is like literally something out of, you know, WWF at the time, Steve Austin, Vince McMahon, Vince making Austin apologize in the middle of the ring, and Austin hitting like a stunner and drink some beers. Like, that's the only way
this
works.
It's the kiss my ass segments, basically.
Yeah, like what, you're gonna have Roy Nelson come out there in front of everybody in the middle of a pay-per-view and go, Mr. McCarthy, I'm sorry, and I apologize. It was wrong of me to strike you way back when, and I'm sorry, and it won't happen again, and then walk away. Like, what the hell? That'd be like the most emasculating thing you could do to a fighter.
And it's only 3 months. I think they cut it back 3 months from 9 months to 6.
Yeah.
It's like, why even bother?
The only way I can see it working is they agree to do it, and they get, if they can do it at a press conference. So they say, all right, Roy's going to fight on, we'll just say March 1st is 6 months. So, like, at the press conference beforehand, he goes, I'd like to make a prepared statement. Dear John, I'm sorry for hitting you. It was wrong. And he moves on, and that's how they get around it or something like that. Otherwise, I don't know, it's just, he needs to be punished. He did something wrong. But what a bizarre way for the Brazilians to go about doing things.
Yes. strange. This weekend, there's actually four shows. We're going to fly through these, though. We've got Bellator 165 on Friday night at the SAP Center in San Jose. Main card features Michael Chandler versus Benson Henderson,
ooh,
Michael Page versus Fernando Gonzalez, Linton Vassell versus Francis Carmont, and kind of an under-the-radar guy who a lot of people don't know yet, but probably will shortly, Adam Piccolotti versus Brandon Gertz. Any thoughts on any of those fights?
The Chandler and Benson fight is super high level. That's about as, you know, I mean, that's two high quality UFC level guys. I mean, we've seen Eddie Alvarez obviously win the UFC championship. Michael Chandler's just as good as Eddie Alvarez. Ben Henderson, same level. That's a really good fight. It'll probably be kind of boring though. MVP Michael Venom Page. They are building a lot of their company around him. He said, the last fight against Cyborg where he shattered his face into obliteration, although I guess Cyborg's okay. He's come through. He's like Wonder Boy with a lot of charisma and even crazier strikes, but he's never really been tested, and he probably won't be until he fights Rory McDonald, I'm guessing. So actually, it probably won't be the worst show. But
no, for Bellator, it's a solid main card.
Yeah, like especially MVP. Like MVP is somebody that he's somebody to watch. Like he's exciting, especially given that he's essentially being fed someone. So and he does crazy shit. And you know, last time he knocked out Cyborg, he did a, you know, he caught a Pokemon afterwards. So you got to give him credit for that, or a Charmander or whatever the fuck. I have no idea about anything about Pokemon. But so yeah, good for him.
And I believe two fighters making their pro debuts on this card. One is Carrie-Anne Melendez, and the other's Baby Slice. Hopefully, this time we'll actually get to fight. We shall see. There's also an Invicta card on Friday night, which I know got a preview up on the site.
Yeah.
In the main event, Tanya Evinger defends the bantamweight title against Yana Kunitskaya, who I'm not familiar with at all. And then there's also a strawweight title fight where Angela Hill is defending against Kayleen Medeiros. Thoughts on that show?
It'll probably be a good show. Avenger, I don't know who the fuck her opponent is. She's usually game, kind of fights an ugly style of fighting. Angela Hill, I mean, she's looked really, really good in Invicta. I think it's exactly what her career's needed. She's got a ton of potential. She was just in the UFC too early. Medeiros isn't bad. Overall, in general, Invicta shows tend to be pretty good. I rarely watch one where I'm not entertained on some level. They have the best entrance music in MMA, if that means anything, and it does. So, I'm looking more. Damn, that's a lot of fucking MMA this weekend. Fuck.
Yeah, then on Saturday, there's two UFC cards with a total of 26 fights between the two of them. 26 fights in one day. If you're on the East Coast, the first show is the show from Ireland in Belfast. This is an all Fight Pass show. It's all Fight Pass. And it's in Belfast. It starts at 12:15 in the afternoon. So you could literally watch fights from 12:15 in the afternoon till 1:15 a.m. that night if you so choose.
Oh, wow.
The main event of the first show is Gegard Mousasi versus Uriah Hall in a rematch. That show doesn't have a lot of big-name fighters on it. Ross Pearson's fighting Gideon Ray. Ian McCall is on the undercard versus Neil Siri. Horiguchi and Bagatinov is fighting. Two good top 10 flyweights there. I'm doing most of this off at the top of my head, but other than that, not a whole lot on the card.
The Ian McCall and Siri fight could actually be really great. They're both really good fighters. Let's just pray for everybody if you believe in prayer. It probably doesn't work. But anyways, give a little prayer there that Ian McCall actually gets a fight for once.
Yeah, he's hit a rough patch as far as that go. Very unlucky.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Hall Musasi is fine. Hall beat him the first time with the spinning back heel kick, and then followed up with the knee. I just watched the fight. Musasi is a better overall fighter, but Hall is just kind of hit and miss. He can be great, he can be not great. Who knows? You know, it's not even in proper Ireland. It's in Northern Ireland, so it doesn't really count. So
then we go from Northern Ireland to Sao Paulo, Brazil. This show, it's crazy because the main card of the Ireland show starts at 4 p.m. Eastern, and there's four fights on it. So you would think it would end around 6.
Yeah.
Typically. This show starts, the prelims start at 6. It's like they're just going from Fight Pass ending at 6 in Ireland to the early prelims for this show in Brazil at 6. It's pretty crazy how close the timing is and everything. Main event of this card is Ryan Bader versus Little Nog. Also, you've got Claudia Gagela versus Courtney Casey. Telus Leitis is on this show. Those are the big names for the most part.
Almeida fights on the show also.
Thomas Almeida, yep. Yeah. Who's he fighting? Albert Morales, who's a 6-0-1 fighter. So, yeah, a lot of fights this weekend. Bader Little Nog is a rematch, but you're not hearing much about that fight. Probably the fight to watch is the Gadela fight. See how she looks after the Joanna loss. Other than that, I mean, this card is not packed with talent by any stretch.
Yeah, because I'm self-centered in life, I feel like I'm being tested by the universe with this one. Like, all right, Mike, you say you love fighting? All right, fucker. You want to do 12 or 13 straight hours of play-by-play? Go for it. Like,
the thing that really sucks about it, granted those Fight Pass shows move pretty quick, just, you know, that FS1 card is gonna drag and drag because it's like they gotta get their commercials in or whatever, and it's like the prelims start at 7 for that, and you know it's gonna go till 1. At least 1 a.m. because that's how those FS1 cards go. After watching that whole Ireland card, it's like, oh my! Like, no sane person would do that unless it's like your job.
Well,
I don't think there's a hard enough core fan out there.
I would.
That would sit and watch from noon till 1 a.m.
Especially
with the commercials and dragging it out.
I probably would, but although I do have to take someone to the airport around 3 that day. But otherwise, I have to wake up. My beloved Liverpool is back because the international break is over. Thank fucking goodness. So they play from 9 to 11, basically. So I have to watch that. Then UFC starts. And then UFC doesn't end until after midnight for me. I'm going to have one really long fucking day. Like, I'm going to need, like, Grubhub or whatever, somebody to deliver me food because I don't know what the hell I'm going to do. I'm like, kind of looking forward to it, because, I don't know, it's fighting. I love fighting. I just want to watch it all the time. But, I don't know, if anybody gives a shit, the coverage on the site is going to probably be half-assed and lackadaisical, because no one gives a shit. I know what people tune in to the site for. We have, you know, thousands and thousands of views for big pay-per-views, and shit like this will have hundreds. Like, it just, nobody gives a shit what happens in Belfast at, 1:30 in the afternoon on a Saturday. Like, it's just not a big draw.
No. Hey, I know it's bullshit, but there's still McGregor and Floyd Mayweather stuff going back and forth. I'm assuming you've seen some of this. You think Conor's getting any closer, like, with all this equity? We never even really talked about him getting the equity shares and part ownership. Do you think he's got any pull now where that's any closer to reality, or no? It's still 0.0% chance.
I have no idea. Like, I don't know what the Floyd stuff really is, other than I've seen it talked about.
Like, wait, because I'm sorry to interrupt, but the one thing I'm thinking is, WME, IMG has all this debt. They want to make money. I don't want to say it's a different concept of the UFC, but they're more, you get the impression that they're more willing to put on, you don't want to say circus type fights, but circus type fights that people will pay for and make money. If they can do $100 a head on pay-per-view for McGregor and Mayweather in a boxing ring and draw and split the revenue, whatever, 50-50 or however they want to do it, is that more likely now than it was a year ago?
It is. It probably really comes down to how much power Dana has, because Dana's smart enough not to let shit like that happen.
But even if Conor got smoked and lost, you could say it was boxing. He's never done it before. He should get smoked. He should get beat. Would it kill his drawing power in MMA necessarily?
Even if it did, for the amount of money he's going to make, it wouldn't matter. The fairest thing would make it a kickboxing match.
Floyd ain't doing that.
I know. And that's really the truth, is that Conor is 28 years old in his fucking prime. Floyd's almost 40, and Floyd's a fucking pussy anyways. Like, he's never taken on hard challenge. Like, he's fought great fighters, but he waited till Pacquiao was a little slower and off his mark and things like that. Like, he's not exactly a dude that's going to take a chance with a 49-0 record who set every pay-per-view by record of all time. I mean, that I say that, but honestly, Floyd versus Conor, that could be the biggest pay-per-view of all time. That could be 5 million buys. That could be 10 million buys, for all I know. I mean, that feels like something like I know it sounds like really crazy, but Floyd is so big, and Conor is so big, and the way that, like, MMA versus boxing, what's really better, and all this shit, like, if you book it on the right weekend, I could just see that just getting so much attention and so many people, and they would pay that $100 to watch it. I mean, yes, Conor would lose in a boxing match. He'd have a puncher's chance at best. In MMA, it would be a joke, but I don't expect it to happen. I don't really know why it's being talked about. I don't know if Floyd said something, Conor said something. But
they're both going back and forth again.
Yeah, and
Floyd essentially said it. It's like a joke that people even compare Conor to him. Mayweather's. He said, "You know, I'm 49-0. I've held 20 different world titles. Conor McGregor's won 2, and he's lost a bunch of times." So then Conor essentially went back and said, "Why don't you say it to my face?"
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, like, again, I've seen it on Fox Sports 1 and ESPN, and like, people are talking about this. I'm like, really? They're really talking about this? And there's a bit of a racial divide on this. I know it's a small sample size, but Fox Sports 1, I hit on the background, and they had Skip Bayless and Shannon Sharp talking about it. And Shannon's like, "Oh, well, you know, Floyd's just the greatest ever, blah, blah, blah. He would beat him, blah, blah, blah." I'm like, are you just saying this because he's black? Like, are you fucking dumb? Do you not know how fighting works? Like, in a real fight, Floyd would die. Like, it wouldn't even be a question. Like, every single fighter in the UFC, every fucking 115-pound woman would beat Floyd in a cage fight. That's not even a joke. Like, every female fighter on the roster in the UFC would beat Floyd. And that's fine. It's a different sport. Just like Floyd would probably beat every fighter in the UFC in a boxing match.
Oh, my God, yeah. You kill him. I mean, like, he's 49-0.
You'd have to go up to probably around...
He's one of the greatest boxers ever. It's a different sport. Like, yeah, of course.
You'd have to probably go up to somebody at 185 or 205 who could just take whatever, yes, and just has so much power.
Sure.
But otherwise, I mean...
I meant similar weight class.
Oh, yeah. I mean, and Conor, you know, he's got great boxing for MMA, but again, it's different sports. I don't know why people have to compare this shit. Stop it. It's like, we don't do this in any other sport. Nobody's ever like, "Well, yeah, you're really good at basketball, but can you score a touchdown?" Like, no, you never hear that. Nobody ever like, "Yeah, Peyton Manning, he's really fucking good at that, but I bet he can't hit a hanging curve." You'd be like, "Well, duh, he's playing a different sport, asshole."
And yeah, I mean, obviously the similarity is it's a form of fighting, but even stuff like do people talk about the best cricket player in the world trying to make it into Major League Baseball? I'm trying to think of like a comparison why the best ping pong player should be the best tennis player. Well, like
it's kind of happened recently where there was like a really famous and really good rugby player came from Australia, was on I think the Raiders. He was on like the special teams squad. He made the squad. He was okay, but he wasn't good. And he got cut like right away. Like he just couldn't handle it. Even though those sports are very similar, there's just so many differences. And like again, everybody's doing this shit since birth, basically. Like it's just stupid. Like I don't know why people can't just everybody be good at what they do and stop like trying to cross promote between different sports. Like, yeah, Floyd wouldn't do really great at point taekwondo. Big fucking deal. He would lose in a wrestling match. Yeah. And a wrestler would, Kale Sanderson would get his ass kicked in a boxing match. Big deal. Who gives a shit? Like, they're different sports. They're high level athletes. They've trained different things. I love MMA. I think the great thing about MMA is that in an anything goes environment, the greatest mixed martial artist beats everybody else from every other discipline. But
right. You
don't put him in special, Floyd is a specialist. He doesn't fight, he boxes. And, the only way he could possibly favor Conor would be a boxing match with MMA gloves. That could maybe favor Conor because he'd be more used to that kind of defense and Floyd wouldn't be prepared for it. But otherwise, stop it, people. Like, it doesn't matter. Floyd's a 40-year-old boxer who spent the past, like, 5 years fighting easy fights. And basically his whole career has been taking very strategic fights. And even if he was in his prime, like, it's a different sport. And he's not in his prime. Why should he fight at 40 another dude in his prime in that dude's specialty? Like, imagine if, like, I don't know, LeBron James came up and like, yeah, fucking Floyd, what a pussy. He can't play he can't ball, he can't dunk on me. Come on, Floyd, let's go. You and me, one-on-one, put it on pay-per-view. People be like, that's really dumb. You'd be like, no, let's see it. Be like, why would we pay to see that? Like, we all know exactly what's going to happen. In boxing, Floyd wins. MMA, Conor wins. That's just the reality of the world. Everybody trained for their specific sport. Just grow up and be adults. I don't know. I don't care.
What do you think's more likely? Conor being in a WWE ring or Conor being in a boxing ring?
WWE.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, far and away. I mean, whether it'd probably just be like a one-off, like WrestleMania type of thing, like Ronda kind of did. But
do you think he would lower himself to it?
For enough money.
Do you think he's too big of a star now?
I think he is, but Ronda did it. Ronda obviously is also a huge wrestling fan and Conor isn't, but there's just no chance in hell he ever boxes. Whereas going to WWE, I could easily see, and look, Floyd was in WWE, right? So like if Floyd Mayweather can do it for whatever they paid him, quote unquote $20 million, like I could see them ponying up, 10 or $20 million bucks and Conor being like, yeah, I'll fucking go in there and do some fake shit and make a joke out of it. And, then Triple H will say he has all the things that are necessary to be a star in WWE. Yeah, besides the fact that you would all look at him and be like, he's really small. He can't be very tough. And then they'd bury him and have, like, Brian Kendrick beat him in a cruiserweight match or some shit.
All right, on that note, that's all I've got for tonight, this week.
Yeah, that's pretty much all I have. I will finish, though, because I'm not going to put out the other podcast, my story about retards. So, last Saturday, I saw Doctor Strange with my brother. And I drove up to his place. He lives in Evanston, home of Northwestern University and all that shit. We saw the movie. Great movie. Afterwards, I drove because my brother doesn't drive his car. His car actually has 3 flat tires. He has not driven his car in over a month because he takes a train everywhere. I'm like, why do you have a fucking car? To sell it, you dumbass. So I drove.
Is the flat tires just... How do you have 3 flat tires? That sounds like something that would happen to Anthony Pettis.
Well, it's like my brother, no joke, he cannot drive his car normally. He actually has a battery, like a thing he carries with him to jumpstart his car, because he just never drives a car. Like Never. So his battery is always dead, needs a jump, and his tires have gone flat because they just haven't been used. So I drove, and I parked in the parking garage across the street from the movie theater. After the movie was over, we walked around for a bit, tried to figure out what we wanted to eat. We sit on Chinese food, but it was near his apartment, him and his fiance's apartment, so we didn't have to eat anything. So I'm standing there in the parking garage, and I got my little ticket. Thing is, in Chicago, and I go to parking garages all the time because I'm, you know, in court and shit like that. I'm a lawyer, everyone. You put your ticket in, you put your card in, take your card out, the ticket comes out, and then you put the ticket into the little slot thing when you try to leave. That's how it works everywhere. Not in Evanston, apparently. I put the ticket in, and I start trying to put the card into the ticket slot, but it wasn't working. I'm like, what the fuck is this? Then I look down, there's like a screen on the thing, like a computer screen. I'm like, I started touching my card to the screen. I'm like, all right, maybe I have to do this. It doesn't work. Then I finally see the card slot underneath, like below the screen. Unfortunately for me, I had just casually said, and I got to pause, get the exact intonation of my voice right. As I'm trying to like put the card into the wrong slot, I said, what am I, a fucking retard? Unbeknownst to me, there's a woman with a retarded daughter standing behind us. I didn't know this until I get in the car and my brother goes, what the fuck did you just say? I'm like, what? What did I say? He goes, that girl was retarded. I'm like, what? No. And so in one moment, I basically told this woman, I am so dumb that the lowest point of my life is you, to her face without meaning to say it. So I basically, this is Trump's America. I've committed a hate crime without even meaning to commit a hate crime. And to the retarded chick in Evanston, I'm not really sorry because you probably don't really remember because you're retarded. But still, for a moment there, I'm like, oh, that was really bad. And,
yeah, that's classic, foot in the mouth there.
Yeah, and I kept thinking, I'm like, there's no other way that works where I don't get my ass beat. And I felt bad. I'm like, if you're like mentally challenged, like somebody says something like that in front of you, you just kind of take it. But if I had been like, what am I, a dumb nigger, and there's a black guy behind me, they would have beat the shit out of me. I would have just been like, huh? Wham! My skull would have been bashing in the wall. I'd be laying on the ground. And when the cops came, I'd be like, no, I totally deserved it. That was justified. But unfortunately, mentally challenged people have to take it. And I feel really bad about, I kind of feel bad about it. I'm mostly just kind of amused by it because I'm a dick, so that's a good way.
It's kind of funny because it could almost be like a skit. Like, what demographics can you get away with saying that? Like whether it's kids or a certain race or gender or whatever it might be. Which ones do you get your ass kicked? And other times, people just stare at you angrily,
exactly,
until you walk away.
Like if it had been a black person, especially a black woman, I would have just heard, "What the fuck did you just say?"
And probably not getting beat up that bad.
Maybe, but I would have got hit by a purse or something, rightfully so. And then, like, there was that part of me thinking, oh my gosh, like, all these stories you hear, they're, like, half bullshit, but some of them are kind of a little bit true, but, like, Trump's America and all the unrest, like, does this person think, oh, look at this white guy? Because I shave my head, I buzz cut my head every 2 weeks with a number 2 and everything, and, I'm wearing, like, MMA shirts and shit like that. Do they think, like, this is Trump's America. They think they can just insult us right to our face and we have to take it. And maybe I have to just ruin this little girl's life for like the next 4 years on total accident. But at the same time, it was just funny enough that I don't really regret it. So I'm just a monster. It's pretty much what it comes down to.
I agree.
So anyways, on that note, Matt will say goodbye and that will be the end of the show.
All right. Thanks for listening and we'll talk to you next week.
Aggressively, we all defend the role we play. Regrettably, times come to send you on your way. We've seen it all, bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter. Don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about.
We hope you enjoy your stay. It's good to have you with us, even if it's just for the day. We hope you enjoy.